Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Stamp, the kick, it's been blocked again! Oh my! It's been blocked again! He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game! Tyreek Cleveland!
Have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Ladies and gents, boys and girls, women, dogs, pets, hamsters, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's fresh off the turf of Ben Hill, Griffin, Corey Knows,
Dan,
and Delatory.
Same point, same time. New time.
Same squad. Jordan will be here soon. How's everybody's weekend, Corey? I know you were all over the state.
Yeah, a little bit everywhere. I'm lagging. I'm about to switch my resolution a little bit. I don't want to be lagging. I was there. Hit Orlando. Chop it up with a defensive lineman. Shout out to fans of the show, bro. Like, just I get hit up with just, you know, people, players, and like wild places that could play. And, like, you know, the fans that have followed me over the years just send me gems. So I end up getting a kid from Vero in that process. And also Orlando yesterday. And then we head up to Gainesville, caught up with my man Vari. Good weekend. How about yourself?
That was good. Low-key weekend over here. Spent yesterday over at the beach. But other than that, just a relaxing weekend. I was going to go boating today. Just because we're about to get into that time of year where it just gets really busy. And then it decided to rain the entire day. Like, it was not supposed to rain. And then it started to rain. And I'm like, all right, well, this will go away. And then it just kept growing and never moving. And it's still literally raining today, or like at this exact moment. So for like 12 straight hours. But I needed it nice and relaxing. One of my best friends just had a baby. So congratulations to them. So I went over and saw them and the new baby today, but ready to pod and ready to have an exciting conversation about the scrimmage. And then Kevin Carter's coming on the show.
Dude, nice. We're at that time of summer, though. Like, I swear you could set your watch by the rain here in Gainesville. Like,
yes, sir.
4 p.m. every afternoon, just monsoon. Friday night, we had our first shout out to the 352 boys in my fantasy draft, fantasy league. We had our fantasy draft at Spurrier's Friday night, Saturday. I don't know what HR is doing, but the grandparents keep taking these trips, leaving me with their grandchildren. It's unbelievable. Pay will be docked soon. There will be a meeting. But yes, my grandparents or my parents left me with their grandkids all weekend. So we're finding time Saturday morning, scrimmage Saturday night, and then today, Sunday, we've been everywhere. So ready to get back into it. Camp officially done. We're into what the program is just basically like a mock game week. So right around the corner. And we have football this week, right?
We've got football. Week zero? Yeah, week zero. We've got college football this weekend. We've had preseason. We're here. The time, I think the timeline's ready for football. You know,
before football starts. Before football starts, huge shout out to the Gator women's soccer team.
Yes.
Just beat the defending national champion, FSU Seminoles. Guess they're not defending anymore. We got a new season, 3-1.
Yeah, first time since 2015.
Just blitzed them. They were up 3-0 in the 12th minute. So that's huge.
Again, but
huge for a new coaching staff. Huge win for the ladies. So shout out to them. It's great to beat Florida State in ping pong. Don't care what the sport is.
Absolutely. No, Nick, I'm glad that you brought that up. That's it was part of my notes to go over. But huge congratulations to them. We're going to jump right into the spring scrimmage. So we're going to do it with our new favorite podcaster, who go check out Greg Brunt's interview if you want to know a little bit about his business. But Corey, let's start with that, and we'll go from there.
One time for my homie, one of the best doing it in the insurance game. Greg, what it do? Make sure y'all tap in with Brunt Insurance and Financial Services, who powered Stadium Miguel each and every week. Visit bruntinsurance.com or give them a call at 954-589-2204, whether it's home insurance, auto insurance, life insurance. If it floats, boats, jet skis, etc., canoes, he can insure that. RVs, motorcycles, four-wheelers, etc. If it got wheels, he definitely can insure it, even if it's a cart that has a sewing machine on it like Jordan Scarlett, right? He insured theirs. He insures my home, my parents' home, their vehicles, etc. We've been dealing with Greg, your home. Like, we've been dealing with Greg for over a decade now. One of the best in the business. Give him a call again, 954-589-2204 or bruntinsurance.com. I'm sure he can save you some money.
Greg, yeah, what do you do, baby? How dare you, Dan?
Nick wasn't here.
You have some respect,
week.
Dan.
Yeah, no, that's my bad. You get a little bit out of the rhythm. Oh man,
that's crazy.
And then one time,
that's crazy work.
I was about to even throw a little tagline: "If it floats, get a quote." But I can't.
I like that. Bars. You know?
If floats, get a quote. And then one time for our friends over at the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. Speaking of Lewis, go check out our interview with Ciante Lewis last week. The Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group is a group of current attorneys that formerly worked on behalf of the insurance companies that are now going to work to defend you. So it's hurricane season. Good time to write this number down, 727-258-0043 or DykusBurkeLaw.com. Again, 727-258-0043. Water damage, hurricane damage, sinkhole damage, flood damage, storm damage, whatever it might be, that's the group of guys to reach out to. Again, the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group, 727-258-0043. All right, so we're going to jump right into a scrimmage talk. We had both of you guys – Nick, you were there, I presume, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, obviously, scrimmage number two and the last scrimmage before we go into mock game week, as Nick alluded to earlier. So, boys, you guys were both there. Give us what your thoughts were on the scrimmage overall.
You can go first.
First of all, my cologne smelled beautiful. My cologne smelled beautiful. Everybody told me I smelled great. YSL. But I thought – you want to go first? First, Nick.
You go first. It's interesting because, like, it's not like they just play a game. So it's like I had to like learn that when I first started going to them. Like, there's like different periods and stuff. At some point, you're just doing
situation. Correct. So, like, correct.
as someone like your first time seeing it, what like your what'd you expect to see and kind of what was the experience?
Yeah, because you was asking me like pre-show was talking a little bit and you spoke about the gassers. I just thought they ran gassers at the end of scrimmage. Yeah. This is my first scrimmage going to. I just thought they ran gassers. So also the in between when they were punting, they got the life vest on. I didn't know what was going on. Like,
yeah,
and they just punting the players on the sideline. So they intertwined special teams in between some of the play. I thought that was pretty dope. Overall, I thought the team looked good. Offensive line is better than what I thought. Run game is going to be strong, right? I got to see us, you know, our competition, but I think our D-line is good. So them being able to get some run gaps with our defensive line, I thought that was pretty impressive. Evan Pryor is better than advertised, to be honest with you. Very explosive kid. You don't really get a good glimpse, a good grasp of it on camera. Seeing him in person, even the small runs that he don't break for big games, he gets to the hole fast. He's an explosive guy. I love Duke. Duke looks back and healthy. So without Ball there, the only drive I missed was the first drive with Ball. Didn't catch that one. So I'm just live play-by-play hitting up some of my guys, telling them what's going on. They're like, what happened to the Ball touchdown? I missed that one. But I thought Tramiel hit some big throws down the field. He ended up hitting Stockton on one that Cromartie tried to, you know, jump. But I thought it was a better throw than a bad break on the ball.
He just rolled the dice. It was a good throw. So it's like –
that
like 35 air yards. Sorry, yeah.
35 in the air, just zimming. Yeah. It's just cutting through the wind, Dan.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's a lot of zim on that thing. But Cromartie didn't come down with the catch. Touchdown, Stockton, I thought that was good. It does look – I heard somebody say this in the space. It looks like the offense aren't the same offense with each quarterback. Like they're running something different. And he could be catering towards their scrims, right? I don't think that's a bad thing because Dan Mullen was a guy that did that. He catered towards the scrim for the quarterback. But it seems that Tramiel presses the ball down the field more when he's on the field than Philo does. Philo moved the ball good. He got a rushing touchdown. I think both quarterbacks look solid, but I don't expect anything dynamic out of the quarterback position this year. My expectations are pretty Luke Del Rio-ish. Like, manage the offense, get us down the field, get the ball in the playmaker's hand, let them make moves, right? Mm-hmm. Linebacker, just guys all over the place. They gotta put Graham like on. Just you gotta know where Graham at. If you're a running back, receiver, etc., you better find out where Five at on the field. You know, he playing with a different type of edge this year. I like what I saw out of him. I'm interested. We'll see what they do at corner. Flowers is my guy, but it looks like Ben and Flowers could be 1 and 2. I think Cromartie got to get a little bit more discipline in his coverage, et cetera. Hmm. He's getting beat on some plays. So I would like to see him just shore up his discipline. That was my knock on all offseason. Physical ability, he might have the highest ceiling in the room, but he just haven't lived up to that 5-star bill yet. But I like the punter too. Shout out to Nick. I thought he was getting some good punts off, good hang time, et cetera. Who else? 7. I think 7's going to be a guy. Amir Jackson. I like what I saw at Hezzy Kent. He does got some ball skills. He probably need to lose another 15, 20 pounds before he's ready to go, like, you know, for a full football season in the SEC. But Amir Jackson is going to be a weapon. He almost looked like a receiver, not a tight end, the way he moves. Mm-hmm. What you think, Nick?
Yeah, the offense moved the ball way better. And like, big chunk plays, too, in the run game. Not both of Duke's. One of Duke's touchdowns was a little bit shorter, but, like, both of, I think they showed clips online too. Both of Duke and Clark looked like they were shot out of a cannon, like found a hole, one cut, gone. Thought the offense moved the ball much better. I think solidifying that interior offensive line, which I think will be Najee Harris, Harrison Moore, TJ Shanahan, left guard, center, right guard. I think that getting that interior set and working for like a little bit more than a week now together every day, you get that familiarity. You get used to the guy next to you. It'll be interesting at tackle with Emeka on the right side and Bryce Lovett on the left side. I think overall the offense moved the ball well. The explosive plays were good to see. It was a struggle moving the ball at times in the first scrimmage. The defense played great. Yeah, I told Miles Graham he owes.
Scrimmage, because I wasn't there. So from the first scrimmage, what would you attribute to the lack of being able to move the ball? So was it offensive line, lack of blocking, lack of execution? Defense was just playing out of their mind.
I think the defense just played well. The coverage was sticky, so there were some plays where, like, even when the offensive line did block well, there was just nothing open. And the offense was just, like, stalling. And even when there was good pass blocking, there was good coverage, the running backs were, like, having to earn their yards. I think running on Florida might be hard this year with the depth you have and the style of linebacker you have, mm-hmm. with a defensive line that Gerald Chapman has said is the best line he's had, the deepest line he's had since he's been here in his third year. Mm. So that's what it looked like. It just looked like, hey, it's hard to run. Like, these guys are having to earn their yards. They opened up way more running lanes Saturday than they did 2 weeks ago. The big touchdown, love to see a 65-yard touchdown, but like also that's one where it could have been if Cormani plays it safe, it's a 35-yard reception. Still a big play, still an explosive, mm-hmm. but it's not a 65-yard touchdown. But that's a big time throw too. Like, you're throwing from the middle of the field, 35 yards outside the hash. That's a big time throw. And then
you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, when you're watching your team scrimmage against one another, right? Because it's like, hey,
yeah, somebody's going to lose.
Right. My wife texted me, are the Gators winning? I was like, sort of.
Can't always say that about scrimmages we had against ourselves either, you know?
Yeah. I think my biggest takeaway, and I think I've said this before on our show, I think Philo reminds me kind of like Graham Mertz, and he's just kind of like steady. You know what he's going to be. He'll make some plays. He's going to play tough. He'll earn your respect because, like, he plays tough. And I think Tramiel has higher highs but lower lows. And I think Philo's here, and then Tramiel is kind of like above him and then under him and then up. Oh, pause. But like, Tramiel just goes up and down. It just isn't as consistent as Philo has been. Higher ceiling, lower floor kind of thing. But I thought they both moved the ball well. I think they were both even in terms of breaking it down, first team, second team kind of thing, mm-hmm. leading drives. And then Will Griffin took a big shot. I think it went incomplete. I'm trying to think. They were going south to north. I'll be interested. I think he is QB3. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's
what overthrew it a little bit.
Correct. He just overthrew it a little bit, but the receiver had him beat for sure.
How's his that thing like Uncle Rico and Napoleon Dynamite straight over a mountain?
How have you seen some of his development? Do you see him getting better this offseason too? I know there's just been a lot of questions. I don't expect him to play this year or next year necessarily, but I'm just curious to see what you've seen out of him.
Yeah, I think so. I think leaving the spring, I don't know that. I would have even said he's the third team. Like, I don't think he had even like solidified himself as the third string. Now I think he would be. Okay. Now, do I think if like both one Philo and Jones get hurt in week two, like, do you throw him out? I don't know how they handle that, but I think
I think Aiden Warren outperformed him yesterday.
Yeah, I think Aiden Warner had, I don't know. I can't remember. I did not do a good job of like keeping.
That's who hit Hezzy, right?
Drives
16. Is he 16?
Yeah, Warner hit Hezzy. That wasn't a great pass. It was a way better catch than it was a pass. Like, Hezzy being able to stop the body control he has in the air. Listen, I still think you show him what left tackles make and what tight ends take, but like, he has made his decision. Someone asked me, they were like, is Hezzy going to play this year? And I was like, I don't know, because the 5-for-5, I think, could change it. Like, you're not trying to redshirt anybody. There is no more redshirting. You just have 5 years to play five or find a judge. But it'll be interesting. He's behind, you know, Luke Harpring, Amir Jackson, Lakota Dupree, And then when Evan Chica comes back too, he's behind all four of those guys. So, but I don't know. Hey, do you find a goal line package for him or find something for him? Because there's no sense in you can't redshirt anyone anymore.
Nick, Corey, I want to pause. I'm going to write down where we left it off because we've got Kevin Carter that just popped in the waiting room, and I want to be cognizant of his time to come on the show. So we'll pick up on the Hezzy part of the conversation, then dive into all of the other things. But before we do that, quick ad read to our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. If you want a cool cup like this one, representing the Golf National Championships of 2023, or any great stainless steel cup that's going to keep your hot drinks hot and your cold drinks cold, GameTimeSidekicks.com. Good. I like that one. GameTimeSidekicks.com. Promo code STADIUM15 at checkout will get you 15% off of your order. And then with that, we welcome three-time SEC champion, consensus first team All-American, 21.5 career sacks, 42.5 tackles for loss, sixth overall to the Rams in 95, 14 seasons, including multiple Pro Bowls, a Super Bowl ring, leading the league with 17 sacks today, an analyst and a member of the 2027 College Football Hall of Fame ballot is our guy, Kevin Carter. Welcome back, Kevin. It's been a while.
How are you? Yeah, it's been a minute.
Man, I appreciate
it. Kevin, that was almost like, I think it was at like the British Open one year and Phil Mickelson's on the tee and he was tied. He was teeing off with Tiger. And they're like listing all of Tiger's wins. And Phil was like, all right, we get it. And as Dan was going through, I'm like, hey, we said we were trying to be cognizant of his time. And you're rattling all this off now.
Well, when you're a ball player, I think when you get old, I think the Wikipedia page, you know, just gets longer. And so there's more things to talk about. But I think that's more just as much accomplishment as it is age.
Man, Kevin, well, it's always good to have you on. I know the last time you were on here, we talked a little bit about your story, about how you ended up here and everything else. So I want to spend this time, obviously, with you now covering, college, still continuing to cover college sports and everything else. Would love to get your read on John Summerall and how you think his success at Troy and Tulane into the SEC, what your take on it is.
Well, the thing about coaching that, you know, I always thought that came to mind because I played for some great coaches along the way. You know, played for Coach Spurrier in college, obviously, but I played for Dick Vermeil, played for Jeff Fisher, played for Nick Saban during his NFL experiment, and I played for John Gruden. And the one thing that, you know, when we had successful seasons, the thing that really hit home was the coach was a manager of personalities, and the kind of person that could manage personalities of a team, build a culture, an identity, but that culture was respected and upheld as well by the coaches that this head coach surrounded himself with. That being said, the thing about, you know, John Summerall is that his track record speaks for itself in terms of galvanizing both people and personnel in terms of coaching around him. I don't know him personally, but one of the best things that I do every year for CBS is we get to do Army Navy. And I'm on the sideline of Army Navy, and I'm sitting next to Beanie Wells. And there's not many people that I've seen Beanie because he's kind of a cool character, you know, NFL running back, kind of a, you know, prima donna type guy. And he just gets absolutely geeked out and gets out of his chair and runs over to someone. I can't see who he's running to. And I'm like, who would make Beanie Wells, you know, just totally geek out like a, you know, 7-year-old girl seeing, you know, Hello Kitty or something. And of course it's Urban Meyer. Okay. So I walk over to this, you know, and I didn't play for Urban, but you know, hey, Gator Nation is strong, you know, and I have a lot of respect for what he brought us. And, you know, Urban's a good dude. So go over, shake hands, and, you know, we break with a small talk and I just cut right through and I'm like, dude, what's the story with Summerall? And he tells me, because I'm seeing him and Danny Werfel and, you know, Shane Matthews, all these people get on Twitter and say all this nice stuff after they hire him, trying to galvanize the Gator Nation. And I'm like, is this just coach speak? Is this just, you know, marketing, trying to get everyone on board, you know, with this new guy? But he, you know, the thing about Urban shot me straight right on the sideline. He said, this is the guy right now for this team in this time. He's the perfect, and he used that word. He said he's the perfect manager of personalities, and he has the right mentality to be at Florida. Now, that's a loaded statement, and a lot of people don't know what that means, but you know, it's a real thing if you don't know what you're walking into if you're going to be the head coach at the University of Florida. It's a real thing, you know, because there are about probably 7 or 8 branded programs in the country that no matter how they've done in recent years, they think that somehow they have to lay claim on both a conference and a national championship, and they have to be relevant year in, year out, no matter what. And Florida's one of those teams, you know, unrealistic fan base, spoiled, you know, with a rich past, NFL players abounding everywhere. And, you know, it's just the way it is. And if you're going to come in and coach and you can't live with that type of pressure and you don't want that smoke, so to speak, then don't come coach at Florida. You know, I'll tell one more story, quick anecdote, and I'll let you ask another question. I know I'm long-winded. But I'm at a wing contest before the orange and blue game, back when Coach McElwain was the coach. And I'm sitting there with his lovely wife, and she's one of the judges in this, you know, hot wing contest as well. And, you know, she leans over, and I'm talking, she's making small talk, and I'm like, you know, how are you enjoying it here, that kind of stuff. And she's like, you know, these fans are, you know, I tell you, they're rabid. I said, yeah, it's great, you know, to have this kind of support. And she's like, yeah, but, you know, we just went to the, you know, SEC championship game back-to-back years, and I feel like there's just so much pressure on us, you know? And she's like, you know, what do these fans want? And I'm like, more. Everything. A national championship. Yes, of course. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about? I won 3 SEC titles in 4 years. That's the expectation at Florida. What are you talking about? And if you're not doing that, then everyone outside the program may call you delusional, but the fans, that's just our expectation.
Yeah, I can echo that from covering McElwain. He, like, privately was just like, what do these fans want? Like, I'm going to Atlanta. And I'm like, and getting smoked by Alabama in Atlanta. They don't want just to get there. I remember they started putting up SEC champion signs on the SEC East champion signs on the wall. And I was like, get that. What? No, you just won. Division titles. No. SEC championships go up there.
I mean, now that the conference is gone away from like divisions, we may have to put them back up. Right.
Auburn retroactively claiming nostalgic national championships.
But I have to like what Don Summerall has done thus far, though. You know, I have to respect both the coaches that he retained on the staff. Love Coach Chapman. You know, if you haven't watched the D-line or how the front has played over the last couple of seasons, man, they're playing some really good football. And they've really developed toughness and a culture up front that, you know, Florida's one of those teams that, yeah, they had issues with, you know, quarterback and trying to, you know, score, manufacture points. And, you know, they may have a breakdown here or there, but from a talent standpoint, you're not going to line up and just out physical, you know, what Florida has on the field. So I mean, I like what they have up front. I like who they have coming back. I like the veteran leadership. I mean, I think you got a couple of guys up front. Mbacho is one of them, if I'm saying it right. Love him. I love that kid. There's kids in the program that have just been developed. And I think, you know, it's easy for a lot of people to overlook some of the talent that they have coming back. You know, James Cameron, you know, Jalen Woods. I mean, you've got some guys, you know, that have played some good football. So I'm excited. I mean, I haven't personally gone down to visit with Coach Summerall yet. I know the door is open, and I'll go down at some point and be a fly on the wall and just observe things. But everyone I talk to, when I talk to Coach Spurrier, he says the same thing. I talk to Chris Doering, he says the same thing. Everyone around the program, you know, that I trust, you know, Fred Taylor, everyone swears by this guy. So I have no other, you know, inkling but to think that he's going to get the job done. But I, you know, again, I would ask for fans to be patient, and I would because it's not something that just because, you know, we watch Kurt Cignetti, you know, win a national title in Indiana, that it's just possible to do. I think the 9 conference games in the SEC this year is going to be a real thing. I think quality of depth to make it through that type of season is going to be a real thing. You know, personally, I mean, I work for CBS, right? And we used to have the SEC on CBS, the biggest game window, you know, college football, you know, all these years, you know, Vern Lundquist, Gary Danielson back in the days, and then now Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson just stepped down, Charles Davis has taken over. I mean, just great coverage. But the SEC left us 3 years ago, and consequently, you know, we've been covering the Big Ten, and last three seasons, the SEC hasn't had a presence in the national championship game.
Where's my tinfoil hat, Kevin?
Yeah, I think it's whatever Kevin Carter's discussing more of is the team that's going to win. I think it's the Kevin Carter effect. Kevin, I want to get your perspective. Oh, go ahead, Nate.
Well, that was me. Real quick, question. This season, I mean, it's an easier schedule than what Billy Napier had, right? We had like the top one or two schedule every year that Billy was here. And then we always had that tough first game. So I think it's an easier schedule, but it's still tough. It's number 7 in the country or how they rank it right now. What does a successful season look like? I know you're telling the fans to be patient, but from a program, you know, eye test, win number, what does it look like at the end of the season for John Summerall to have a good year one and make it past the honeymoon phase?
I think anything better than, I think, 7-5, like coming into his initial year, like if the Gators are 8-4 and go to a respectable bowl and they retain a lot of their talent and don't get hit by the portal and they can pick up some pieces of what they need. I think that's because you're talking about a situation where you don't have, you know, you have a new quarterback, right? You have a new offense. You've got all these new pieces and a new coach and all this, you know, chemistry that has to come together. You know, you've got good pieces, but and you may look good in, you know, in practice, but in real time, you know, having to have that type of culture, chemistry, you know, shared IQ, toughness, all those things that make you a winning team, you know, that's where I caution anyone. I mean, if you want to dissect how Kurt Cignetti was able to be so successful, you know, he had an established culture and his coaches, and he had, you know, a handful of very, very skilled, older, high football IQ role players who knew exactly what their job was to do in the offense and defense that they were playing in. And they went out and carefully selected, you know, more pieces like that and guys that were unselfish, you know, the types of guys that play a long time. These are older players. These were seasoned guys. And that's a harder sell than coming into a program, you know, with a bunch of existing talents, very talented players that John Summerall has, but, you know, you've got to get them on your page. You've got to get them in your program. You got to get them speaking your language and, you know, get them to believe in you as a coach. You're the one that has to manage those personalities to sell them on the prospect that their contribution, no matter how large or small, is the difference between you winning and losing. And that effort is not only made on the practice field, it's made every day and every meeting and every workout. So it takes a while to develop that kind of toughness and that type of stick-to-itiveness and that type of collective team love.
Kevin, I want to ask you, this is more just football broadly, and it's kind of taking us away from the Gators just to an issue that actually was impacted like an hour ago, and that was with former Ole Miss tight end Daquan Wright, who now plays for the Cleveland Browns, has asked to be waived with a deal for him to enter the LSU roster for this upcoming season. There's right. probably some still things that need to be worked out because there's like an intra-SEC transfer rule and everything else, but we've kind of jumped the shark here, right? Well, at least that's my opinion. What are your thoughts on kind of like what's happening now? Because I don't think that this is going to be the only player that chooses this path.
Anything and everything is happening now in college football because there were no rules put in place to begin with. It's sort of the Wild Wild West. You're going to see all these one-offs and situations where people are seeking eligibility. People are, you know, gambling and still getting eligibility. People are now going pro, you know, and they're all, the kids are all getting paid. And, you know, this is nothing more than like G League players coming back to college basketball. It's the same phenomena across college athletics because of the lack of structure of NIL language. So I think the NCAA kind of missed this chance to put a structure in place. Personally, I don't think it's right for someone to have been to an NFL training camp and then come back to play college football. I'm all for players. I'm all for kids making money. I'm all for all of that. But you weren't going to be able to stop that. And we live in a capitalistic society. And look, I sit in studio every week and I do, you know, a FanDuel top five or do this. And we have all these gambling elements, right? And sure. And so it's a very lucrative game right now. So I'm all about the kids getting theirs. But, you know, I think the nostalgia and the game, the race of making it to the show, to the NFL, that elite club, that dream come true. I mean, there has to be a rite of passage. There has to be a clear separation. Once mm-hmm. you've crossed the threshold, you can never come back. Not that you can't come back to school, but you can't play. There has to be something there. I see these 7 and 8 year, you know, seniors, and I'm like, what are we doing? I mean, the only, you know, 27-year-old freshman should be someone who served in the military or someone who wouldn't play baseball or, you know, something like that. Or maybe you, you know, had horrific injuries and you know, that kept you out or something. But I'm really kind of spellbound by the whole thing. I think there's going to be a lot of litigation, you know, over this next couple of seasons to kind of set precedents and actually get some semblance of rules to what you can and can't do in this new Wild Wild West era of NIL football.
What we had Scott Strickland on the show on Monday, we were talking to him and he's like, it's a regional sport for the most part, a regional mm-hmm. team being governed by a national body. And the rules are just different all around the country, right?
Yes.
And how this works and trying to govern by one universal way is probably not the most effective moving forward. And he didn't hint that they were thinking about the SEC withdrawing from the NCAA, but he also did not hint that there might be some action that schools and conferences need to take to protect themselves. With Congress having two stall bills, and I don't expect you to be an expert necessarily on all of this, right?
Right.
With Congress having two stalled bills, the NCAA kind of punting things, colleges and universities just kind of blaming the NCAA, even though like mm-hmm. the NCAA represents them. Obviously, there's a lot of players that are wanting to get involved and what that means. Like, what is your take on like football 5 years from now?
I think football 5 years from now will be I think it's kind of like a lot of things on this planet right now, right? I think we're getting better and better and worse at the same time. I think that college football is going to get more exciting. Obviously, the possibility of who could win on Saturday is approaching a Sunday game type probability in terms of who can win and who has good players, because now the good players are more widespread because of NIL money. So now you're looking at, you know, who are the best coaches, who are the best people that develop talent, and how can you build a culture? And so all these variables are coming into play. But in five years, I see it just like now. I see it like, there's going to be something that we didn't know was going to happen that's now happening that we have to deal with
sure.
if rules don't get put in place. I see the game, you know, still being magnificent. I see the game still being great. And but you have to ask yourself, you know, yes, you're, you know, the Big Ten, the SEC, they're pretty much leading the way in terms of the charge of, you know, what to do and how to do things, because they make so much, they generate so much revenue, and I get that. But at the same time, the body of college football, you know, is better when it's when its members are present and when there's, you know, the stakes are higher in terms of how you crown a champion. I you know, talk about seceding from the NCAA. Like, who are you going to play? Just play yourselves? Like, what are we really talking about here? Like, I mean, yeah, like that's these are silly hypothetical, you know, mm-hmm, wild idle threats when you can't account for the TV deal that you're going to have to sell, you know, sign mm-hmm for all your member schools to receive their money. Like, what are we talking about? Like, if you're not playing, right, you know, if Texas isn't playing Ohio State, then someone's not getting paid. Like, no, there's a lot more money at stake, like behind what some of these kids are even making and what the coaches are being paid. These are billion-dollar deals. And, you know, we can, I think, you know, this is fodder for discussion on, you know, shows like this. and we do the same thing on the air. We talk about some things that, you know, we don't really need to talk about that because it's really not going to be an issue because that's, you know, not in the best interest of them or the NCAA or college football.
You said a lot better than I wanted to say, so thank you.
It's interesting to me, though, because it's – I think the fear was you have the haves and the have-nots. And maybe, like, Ohio State's been very good. Michigan won a national championship, Georgia, LSU. But then Indiana wins, right, and kind of comes out of nowhere. And I think there's probably maybe 15, 20 teams that you think, like, okay, they could make a run if they get hot. Yeah. But it is interesting that it is the Big Ten, it is the SEC, and mm-hmm, at some point you've got to figure out a way that we're all playing by the same rules, and it's not some judge in Louisiana, some judge in Georgia, some judge in South Florida, right, completely rewriting the rules on a daily or weekly basis. Mm-hmm.
I don't – the thing about players coming back from college, if the precedent isn't set properly, mm-hmm, then, yes, you are going to have, you know, a situation where you're going to have a billionaire who just wants to fund a college football team. And mm-hmm, they come in and they buy everything and everyone, you know, from wall to wall. I mean, there's nothing really stopping, you know, so many different wild scenarios in terms of making that happen. So – yeah, Indiana winning was a huge deal. It changed the trajectory of, you know, and shows the possibility of what NIL football could really be. I mean, you know, we're not really hearing a lot about, you know, I guess Mark Cuban, right, behind the scenes in Indiana. But it's like, yeah, you got people that are already, you know, huge fans of this and, you know, look, like I said, when there's billions with a B involved, and there's gambling, and there's a lot of activity, not going anywhere anytime soon.
Kevin, we appreciate your time. Jordan, Corey, Nick, you got any final questions before we let Kevin back get back to his day?
I did have one. Yeah, I got one.
Well, go ahead, go, Jordan.
Wanted to ask, you know, I know I don't even want to go too far back, but just kind of circle back to the Florida team a little bit this year. I kind of just want to get your take on what's one piece that you think, if we are missing any pieces to this team to make us be successful, just from like seeing and viewing from what you've seen at this point.
I think on paper, I don't think you're missing anything. I just think you're really, the Gators, like any team, are, everyone's kind of held captive to the trajectory of their quarterback's ability, period. So we don't know, you know, you may have, you know, Jaden Baugh, you may have dudes in the backfield, you may have receivers, you may have, you know, Dallas Wilson, and you got the transfer, Eric Singleton, believe. You have Eugene Brown. You got, I'm trying to think. I'm hitting me off the top of my head. Like, you've got weapons, and you've got a now veteran offensive line, right? Guys that have played, and you've got a guy named Phil Trotline, mm-hmm, coaching their offensive line. And I know that amongst Florida The lore and legend of Trotline offensive line play is growing and it's rightfully so. But man, you've got to have the guy. You might have a Corvette, but you better have a professional driver driving that Corvette. Because if I'm driving that Corvette, then it's going to be driving 30 miles per hour because I'm afraid of that much power, and with a fiberglass frame. So I'm not going to drive that fast. So you need someone at the helm that's going to bring this offense to its full potential. Defensively, I really think that we're going to be good. But defense can only be as good as the balance of your team says it can be. And that's a loaded statement as well. People don't understand that because there are some defenses, historically that have just been better, right? They have special players. They have special cohesiveness. They've got just dudes on defense. But in today's game, with the advantages and the evolution of the sport, it is hard to stop people. How you can hit people, how you can tackle people, there's a lot. Defenses are really more at a disadvantage. Obviously, everybody wants to see more scoring, and more exciting game. But I think the defense is going to be more than adequate. And I think we could have a great defense if we don't turn the ball over and we're consistent with, the little things, time of possession, turnover ratio, controlling the clock, limiting, time of possession and your opponents, being opportunistic on special teams, winning the vertical field position game. Those are all things that you really can't take you can't take an objective qualitative measure of those things until you see them in real time. And so that puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So, if Aaron Filo's the guy, then we got to find out how special he can be.
My question is very short, very quick. Yeah, real quick. Who's big dog right now? Big Ten, SEC. Who's leading the forefront? It was SEC for a long time.
It was the SEC for a long time, and I'll say this: that's kind of it's not a simple answer. The best answer I can give is the best teams, the nation's best teams, by the last 3 years have been out of the Big Ten, but more good teams from top to bottom is the SEC, hands down. The possibility of Ohio State losing to Purdue, aren't high, right? But LSU can cruise in to Starkville and, Kamari and Taylor can get loose and you can turn the ball over a couple times and those cowbells get a little wild. And next thing national championship contender has a little X, a little asterisk on their perfect road to the championship. That can happen really easily. Let Texas go in and play Arkansas half-cocked if they want to. Go in against Alex Golesh on the Plains, at Auburn when he's got, Byron Brown, and that whole USF offense. And now he's got bigger, shinier toys to play with, with the culture that guy built down in USF. These are real things, right, that don't exist in any other conference except for the SEC. And this is not just, these teams are good. No, these teams might just be physically better than you. Like, they may be stronger than you. They may be faster than you. Like, you're not walking into Columbia, South Carolina, thinking that you're just going to run all over the Gamecocks. You're not going to, Texas walks into the Swamp last year with a struggling offense, right? And, that's why they didn't go further, right? It's like, everywhere you look in the SEC, there are, there's consequences week in and week out. So there are no easy games. Vanderbilt will beat your ass. Kentucky will beat your ass. Like, these are real things that don't exist in the Big Ten. They don't exist in any other conference except for the SEC. So best teams, Big Ten, elite teams, yes, Ohio State, Indiana, with the level they played at the last couple of years, Michigan, no one's been able to touch ultimately, right, at the end of the year. But more great teams, a log jam of just really, really good teams. I'm talking, you know, I'm an AP contributor every week. It's hard, and people get pissed off, and I'm like, you're just not better than these seven SEC teams. I'm going to rank them before I start ranking people in the ACC. You know, if you're not named Miami, you know, you're not going to be in that discussion. So just a real thing.
Yeah, even like a South Carolina, like Williams-Bryce is an incredible atmosphere. Kentucky's atmosphere has gotten better. You go down to Texas A&M and it's wild. I just don't know that you're getting that in like Rutherford, New Jersey. When UCLA there were no easy
games. There were no easy games. I mean, even, you know, 50 years ago when I played, right? It's like, I mean, you there were.
Oh, no, Kentucky was pretty easy for you guys. Kentucky seemed pretty easy.
You think so? You remember the famous broadcast? Doring has a touchdown. Doring has a touchdown.
True.
Yeah, we went in half-cocked against Kentucky my senior year in 1994 and turned the ball over six times and almost came home with a loss. Okay? If it hadn't been for Chris Doering catching that ball right over the middle. It's a little bang eight, little skinny post, safety out of position, touchdown. And we were like, let's get the hell out of here. Get on the bus. Let's
go. That's true.
No easy games, man. The SEC is still, to me, the hardest, the toughest conference to play in.
Kevin, I think we all agree with you, man. But it's such a pleasure to have you come on today. And certainly good luck. I know you've got a very hectic schedule, probably starting this upcoming weekend through the duration of the college football season. So we appreciate it, as always, for you for joining us at Stadium and Gale. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Let's check back in, after a couple of games and talk about the Gators' progress through this season. I'd love to come back on and top it up with you guys.
Absolutely.
Game day.
Do you know whenever you're going to find out about the College Football Hall of Fame?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea. It's
one of three Gator finals, him, Percy Harvin, and Alex Brown. I think all three of you deserve it.
That's you know, it's some pretty good company to be in, I tell you that.
Right.
So
well deserved, my friend. Well, Kevin, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon and throughout the football season.
Thanks, guys. Go Gators.
Thanks, brother. Go Gators. All right. Kevin Carter.
Man, I had completely forgotten how angry I am that we don't get the CBS jingle into that 3:30 until he said CBS now. What have they stolen from us? What have they taken from us, Jordan?
They're taking everything.
Recipes.
Nothing sacred at all.
Listen. Let the NFL players come back and play. Just give me the jingle back. Like we can negotiate.
That's a bridge too far, Nick.
We can negotiate. It doesn't have to be forever.
Yeah, people, like, you got people, kids out there, Nick. Can't just be letting these grown people come back and beat on people's kids. Like,
listen, they just named Georgia Southern just named Max Johnson their starting quarterback. He is 25 years old. He's a quarter of a century old. He was playing when Jimbo Fisher was the coach at the Florida State University.
Yeah, he was
on UNC when Mack Brown was the coach.
He was the last quarterback at Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, the last quarterback for Ed Orgeron at LSU.
So he ended careers.
Last game, he's a Grim Reaper. Clay Helton, a coach that Gator fans were talking about years ago before he went to USC or was at USC. It's time to pack your bags, brother. You will not be a Georgia Southern at the end of this year. Let's Jordan, welcome back. Or welcome to the show. Glad you could join us. We didn't get very far before Kevin Carter. We're just talking a little bit about the scrimmage, just so you know where we're getting caught up from. So Nick, we're talking the Hezzy Kent touchdown. So I want to run through just a few things just to kind of set the groundwork for the scrimmage in terms of like what was reported, and then obviously I'd like you guys to add in everything else. So we talked a lot about the running backs, and you can correct me if any of this information is wrong. Waltus Clark, two touchdown runs. Evan Pryor, a touchdown. Jaden Ball had a touchdown as well. Tramell Jones threw a touchdown to Bailey Stockton. And then we saw, and then obviously I know after that it gets wonky and weird because it's not just a full-on 60-minute scrimmage. But that's what I've got on the offensive side of the ball in terms of scoring. Does all of that sound right? Was there anything else? I know we mentioned the Bailey stop.
Paolo got a run. He ran one in.
He ran one in? Okay.
Yeah, he's a better runner than I thought. I'll give him that. I think he's a better runner than I thought.
I think Nick did say he was sneaky fast. He did.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, listen. I understand that at the rate that I throw jokes out there, it could have not been taken seriously, but.
Yeah. Oh, you said Aiden Warner could spin it, so people weren't respecting you.
I didn't say what he could spin. Maybe he's got a pizza shop.
He could spin it. He could spin it like Young Miami said.
maybe he's an elite hula hooper. I didn't say what was spinning.
Okay, well played.
It's you guys jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, it's our fault. Yeah, it's our fault.
It's never
not that you might have retweeted multiple things around that time showing him throwing the ball. It was our fault. I get it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Nick tried to calm the fans down. Now you can spin it, bro. But,
I mean, also like. Yeah,
he probably can't
three into DKR in a top four team. It's not going to go well.
They ran. It was blocked well, but he ran. I think this was goal line like play at that point. But he took about a 10 yard run.
Just started on like the 12 yard line. It was just like it wasn't like a kick or anything. Right. It was like someone scored a touchdown. They're like, all right, cool. Spot the ball in the 12. So like that's kind of what I was getting at earlier about. It's not like a regular football game. They're working
situational football.
Yeah. There's some red, some red zone work.
Yeah.
So offensive line looked better, at least past Corey's eye test. As in Nick, I think that you kind of alluded to now that the five is kind of solidified as starters and they're starting to gel a little bit more. That they have, we have seen some progress, which we all kind of thought under Phil Trotwine.
Yeah, I think interior, I feel much better about the interior line than I do about the tackles. I worry when you get like an Oklahoma who's got a big, nasty defense who can get after it. Like, I worry about a defense like that. Very encouraging yesterday because I do think very highly of Florida's defensive line. Very encouraging to see running lanes pop open.
Yeah.
And some of them were like Moses. Some of them were biblical in how big the running lanes were. So encouraging that, but I don't want to like sit here and gas people up. I'm still worried and concerned about the tackle spot.
Yeah. I wonder, I'm not sure if y'all know or not, but I wonder how much of that practice was like a scripted play versus like a call it situation. Cause I feel like doing that too, that obviously is like a big difference in like why you may see a big open hole on certain runs, because I mean they've been coaching against each other, let's just say, for how many months now, you know, so they're kind of getting familiar with what they like and what they like to go to in certain down and distance situations. So I was interested to know if that was more of like a fully scripted scrimmage or if they maybe had certain periods that were more of like a call it, we just letting it fly, letting it go, and just watching our two shoot coordinators go at it and watching our two off like our offense and defense going at it as well.
Yeah, it do. I don't know if they were scripted or anything like that, but you weren't here earlier. I was enjoying it. It looks like they have different game plans for each quarterback for sure. Like there was a different approach to what they wanted to do in the offense for sure. Not saying it's a bad thing. I thought both players, I don't know what Faulkner's seeing in their strengths and their weaknesses, and he's catering the plan around what they're good at. But I don't know if it was scripted, but they definitely, I think, attack defenses differently.
Definitely. It's good to know.
What did you walk away, I guess, most on just on the offensive side of the ball? We'll talk defensive side too. What did you walk away from the scrimmage? Maybe something that was alleviated in your mind, Corey. Was it the offensive line? Was it the – I know you had mentioned Bailey Stockton. What was your biggest kind of takeaway that you saw or takeaways?
I like one of the things I wanted to see, organization, you know, penalty-free. It wasn't a lot of just boneheadedness. The team just seemed very structured over the years, getting 11 players on the field. So just this organization was, you know, one thing I was just going to look out for. But penalty-wise, I thought they were you know, like they game one ready, to be honest with you. It wasn't a lot of false starts, no fumbling or snaps or anything goofy, not a lot of pass interferences or anything like that. So that stood out to me for sure. I do like Stockton, him catching the ball deep down the field like that. Like, I think he's going to be we got some skill position players. Like, the only question mark in my mind is, like, I wish we had a dynamic quarterback. We'll see what Buster Faulkner, how he coached these guys up. But the receiver room, I'd be hard-pressed to find one, you know, better than ours. And Six wasn't even out there, right? Running back room, Evan Pryor is himothy. Like, Jay Ma, I like him. I like Duke. I think we got three guys that's not a big drop-off. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Gator. I think that's a very – I don't know how we got Evan Pryor.
I think Evan Pryor, he was interviewed last week or a couple days ago, and he's like, hey, I don't need to go to a place where I have to run the ball 20 to 25 times to make an impact. And I think even at the last scrimmage, Landon Montgomery had a big scrimmage too. So I think 1 through 4, you've got maybe one of the deepest rooms in college football. And that doesn't even include, the redshirt freshman that Jordan's excited about too, that had the Byron opportunity. Lewis. Byron Lewis that had the opportunity, and Byron Lewis was heavily recruited out of high school too, so he's no slouch. And then of course you've got Anthony Rubio there pulling up the caboose. but 1 through 5 is a pretty solid 1 to 4 in an NIL and transfer portal world. I think everybody is doing and exceeding the expectations. Obviously, Jaden Ball has the most expectations, preseason All-American, second team All-SEC. But there's just something about the rest of that room can make each one of them even more dynamic.
Yeah, I think I said last week, last Monday, I think Duke and Evan are the same style running back. Jaden's like your all-around guy. London Montgomery would be like your short down guy, but I don't know that you're taking Jaden Ball off the field on 3rd and 1.
Better not.
Or 4th and inches.
That'll get some Gator fans pissed off, tell you that much.
Yeah. it's just a super solid room. I really liked the biggest thing for me. I know you asked Corey, but the biggest thing for me to regurgitate it again is
these questions for everybody,
the interior offensive line I thought looked really good. And then interesting to me too was kind of seeing like how punt return, kick return might shake out, because I think punt return will be VB. But then I saw Jabari Flowers back, I think, for kick return. I don't know how many kickoffs you return this season. It might be like you can probably count them on like a single hand now. But that's something that's interesting.
I hope FAU kicker has a weak leg and just can't get it in.
I know, yeah. Campbell's kicker will.
Right. That's what I'm hoping.
What do you mean? A camel could be a very strong kicker.
That's a good point, Nick. I didn't think about it that way. An actual camel would be sick.
Yeah. Mike Amaze is fun. Just a big hit. It's football.
Yeah.
I did tell Miles, diminish my biggest fan question.
You know what I mean? I did tell our friends from the North Side.
It was 5-on-5 crime. I did tell Miles, like, you gotta get him lunch or something. Just
Miles ate all the weights, man. We got any left? Mm-hmm. I think he ate all of them. Is Six okay? I got a lot of questions about Six. I don't know what his availability health wise or just precautionary. Like, what's the deal with Six?
He's sick. I saw him after scrimmage and stayed away from him. Just an illness. Mm. Yeah, he was full go Thursday for a full pad practice. And then Friday was kind of like a walkthrough, but he did everything Friday too.
Everybody's just walking on eggshells. And he's not there.
Honestly, sit him.
I was cool with it. It was wet out too.
Get two. Yeah. Get three, get everyone to September 5th. I don't care what you look like in practice on August 24th. Get there to September 5th.
Yeah, how much were they running ones? Like, how many reps? Ones got a lot of reps, majority of the reps? Or were they kind of trying to sprinkle it out, let everybody kind of sprinkle in it? I know a lot of stuff that's not really solidified, too, so they maybe were trying to see a lot of guys.
I'm trying to think back. So, like, Jaden Ball has been on a pitch count, I think.
That's what I'm saying. A guy like him, I feel like, how much reps is you really getting for real? Like, are you going to let you
Yeah. Because I remember like, after – first scrimmage, people were asking on our site, we're like, did Jaden Ball even play? And I'm like, yeah, like a little bit, but like, what do you want? You're not trying to get Jaden Ball 27 carries in a scrimmage.
Exactly. We got some other guys that need to be seen and need to show me.
So there's guys that are on pitch counts. I thought VB played a lot. He was out for the last scrimmage. So maybe getting a little more work.
Might be a conditioning thing too.
Maybe, getting him on game.
Yeah, he only missed, I think, like one practice and the scrimmage. I think I walked into the building Friday before the first scrimmage, and I was like, yo, what's going on? He's like, I'm fine. Nothing too surprising. It's like, I've learned this, like last year with Billy, what I saw in practice – and what I saw in the scrimmage is what I ended up seeing on Saturday for the most part, especially when 100%. I started going Jordan, when I started going like during game prep weeks, like when it was game week for Tennessee, I'm like watching, there was one trick play that I watched them like practice for like 6 weeks in a row and it never worked in practice. And then all of a sudden it popped up in a game and it didn't work. And I'm like, that's crazy. I saw it not work in practice. For a month and a half.
You got to wonder why they got fired as head coach. You know what I mean?
And here it is on Saturday doing what? Exactly what happened in practice.
I think you texted that to me before like that play ran. And they're like, they've been doing the same thing for a while and it's not working. And then all of a sudden you're like, that was the trick play that didn't work. I'm like, no surprise.
Yeah.
There were some designs I seen on Saturday that I could tell – they're in camp mode, right? And they just seen it. So there were some designs in Faulkner's offense that he was doing that I know gonna work on other teams, but our defense has seen it 1,000 times, so they snuffing it out. But there were some good designs. I like the way the offense operates for sure.
Like, so even when I'm doing like practice notes on like a regular day, there's an entire period where they're running the same three plays and they're doing team, but they're running like variations of three plays. And so, like, this is something that the defense has seen. You might see something that looks really cool on offense, and it's like, hey, the defense has seen that 47 times. None of that window dressing is window dressing to them anymore. Like, it will
be for somebody else.
But, like,
I like
Jaden
that.
Jaden Woods has seen this. Miles Graham could probably be calling out, you know, what the offensive line's protection is and what the play is, you know, by week four of camp.
Yeah. No, I think things I would have liked to see, I would have liked to see us press down the field a bit more. I would like to see the quarterbacks, like I said, do more dynamic things. It felt like Tramiel was pressing sometimes, especially in like when it's fourth down, the scrimmage is about to end. Like his interception, a lot of times you just got to be there to see the situations. There's more context than just reading the notes, the practice notes, right?
Right.
You got to get your eye on things. So I thought when Tramiel didn't have to press, you know, I thought he played very well when he wasn't just trying to make a play. He had another interception that was dropped that was, I think, two plays before that throw, but just trying to press. When he's playing within the game, I think both guys moved the ball very well. Would have liked to see, like I said, Philo hit pay dirt with a pass. Would have liked to see VB3 go deep, you know, just for like just my own conscience, right? Just going vertical. I think it's
For selfish reasons, I wanted to.
I want to see one streak down the field and cook somebody. I think
that's something really important that you said. So, like in my role, like I'm also protecting the team. So, like there's stuff when I'm putting my practice notes, I'm leaving stuff out, or saying like, "Hey, here's a short pass. That could be a screen. That could be." An end around, that could be something. Right. And people are like, oh, there's lots of short passes. And I'm like, well, I'm just not going to tell you exactly what happened And you know, I'm not talking bad about the media because I had to do the same thing. The 20 minutes you get is just individual. Like, we're throwing routes on air. You're only getting so much. And to base, and I get that the fans can only get what the media is putting out or what I'm putting out, but it's like, to make a decision on this is the quarterback who I want and the only quarterback we can win with based on the routes on air I've seen or the practice notes that I've read, it's crazy to me, because there's a lot of context that I can't even put in without telling you like what the formation was or what like the scheme of a play was. And there's very little context from 5 second video clips during individual periods.
Yeah, there's been I've heard a lot of questions, like friends and people, like, who do you think's going to win? I'm like, I'm not at practice. I was like, I've got some people that have told me kind of what they think. But at the end of the day, like 6-7 months ago when Buster Faulkner got hired, I was like, yeah, I'm pumped about this guy. I think that he's going to call a good offense. And if Buster Faulkner says that you can win with both without having seen any of it with my own eyes, like, you can read the practice reports, you can listen to the people that are there. Like, I just have to go to the idea that, like, if he says you can win with both, one of them is going to be a starter. I think it's going to be the guy that followed his offensive coordinator and got paid, you know, what he did to come over here. That's just my interpretation. But I do think that there's a lot of hullabaloo around who the starter is. A lot of people that aren't, and I'm not calling anybody uninformed or ill-informed. Like, I don't know who's at practice, who's not, who's been a scrimmage and who hasn't. But I also think that there's a lot of personal attacks at people over like what their thoughts and opinions are on this. Right. Yeah.
Oh, honestly, like,
it's insane. I'm glad you brought that up, man. I just think it's go ahead, Nick. I'll let you go first.
If Evan Pryor is named the starting quarterback tomorrow and Florida goes 10-2, bet you're real happy about that.
Well, we're going to cheer for whoever the quarterback is.
Evan Pryor is the running back.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
There's never been a time, me personally, there are some negative fans that like that they wish for the demise of a player, right? I ain't on that. Anybody that has ever played quarterback at University of Florida, I cheer for. That's just what it's going to be. I have, and I'm very transparent. I have a personal relationship with Tramiel. I want to see him win it. That don't mean if I don't win it, I'm going to be sad, mad. I'm not going to be anything. I'm going to show up and cheer just like you guys with my Flyers Gator outfit, bro. Ain't nobody going to do anything about it. But back to just like the scrimmage. Who cares who's there and who's not there? Like, we got to check in. Like, we Bloods and Crips now? Like, what are we doing, baby? This is college football. This is supposed to be something fun. We're following it because we're passionate about it. And it just ends there. If you're not there, if I am there, like, what do I got to do? Go in and check and shake everybody's hands to be there officially? Like, I don't get it, man. None of it makes sense, man. We got to it's football. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
We're arguing about who's at practice.
Yeah, we almost made it through an offseason. Yeah, right. We almost made it through an offseason. Yeah, the last week and a half, you know, normally I'm a week zero hater. I'm like, let's just do it on week one. That's why we call it week one. Like, week zero is not a thing. But now I'm like, week zero's got to be here ASAP. We gotta get back. There's a lot of I think all of us on this show and I have tried to pry information out of Nick. He won't share it with me. I've tried to pry information out of other people. They'll give me their thoughts, their opinions on it. But my philosophy is like, if I'm going to say like, I trust Buster Faulkner to run this offense and I'm going to be excited about John Summerall, until there's a snap of football, I'm just going to say, hey, I've got to trust them to make that they're putting the University of Florida's football team in the best position to win. That's my personal take on this whole thing. And I just think that we got to get to football. Got to get to football.
Yeah. And it's okay, everybody. It's okay to think differently. It's okay to have a different opinion. It's okay. That's life. That's America, bro. It's okay for people to have a different perspective, bro. If you want to dissect every John Summerall interview, then by any means, go ahead, my guy. I don't care. I'm not going to sit there and dissect each one. But if you do that, I'm not mad at you for doing that. Like, it's okay. Y'all make it weird around this college football thing, man. Like, geez,
it just feels like people have set up a camp, and they'd rather be right about what they want than like Florida to win. and the other guy to be successful, which is like, maybe that's right. Just like we've gotten into like a 24-hour 365 right. Talking about it, and we're just so far from the games, like
echo chambers.
Well, and then you selectively choose the information that you want to hear and listen to, and that you're going to parrot back, or you're going to try to find any fault in any argument. Like, at the end of the day, I just want to see the University of Florida football team win, because like, this podcast is so much more fun when we're talking about us winning football games than it does like, you know, UF couldn't score, you know, or we lost to USF. Right, we lost to this kid. We're on a four game losing streak. Like, it's not exciting to like hop. Like, I love hanging out with the boys, but like firing up the computer at 8 p.m. on a Monday night, like we used to after the fourth loss in a row, gets a little demoralized.
You remember when I, like, when Dan came and won like 10 games in three straight years?
I was lit.
My trolls got to change from trolling bad Florida to trolling other teams.
Yeah,
I was a new man.
Wore off quickly, and you became negative Nick, and now you're propaganda Nick. We didn't get the chance to
for duty.
We didn't get the chance to talk much about the defense. We kind of did. We talked about the interception. We talked about the defensive line being solid. Miles Graham, obviously, a lot of excitement there. Anything that we saw out of the defense that stood out, or any new names that are worth mentioning?
KJ Ford is Timothy, like I said before the spring. Timothy.
Really?
Timothy, yes, sir. A guy.
I think what about 43 was on that field at all, or what?
He got some reps with the ones, if I'm not mistaken, right, Nick?
That's what I like to hear.
Because it's kind of like that. I think he will get on the field when they rotate. So if the formation, let's say if they come out, defense or the other offense comes out in 12, you're not leaving Kanye Clark on the field. So Kanye would come out. Someone like Bryce would rotate down, and then you would bring in Alonzo to play next to Coleman, or you bring in Drake to play next to him. But I think Alonzo would be
– who was the name you just said?
Coleman.
Oh,
Coleman,
Drake. Right.
Drake Stubbs. Sorry.
Sorry. I didn't hear what you said. Okay.
Yeah, like Drake Stubbs and Allen would be like next up, I think.
I didn't see Stubbs really play. I think Stubbs like – playing the threes, which was a little concerning.
They're saying he plays in quicksand a little bit. Maybe he's not as rangy.
Yeah, he may want to make that move to backer. Just a pin.
He likes hitting.
No disrespect. Yeah, he definitely is a physical guy. But I was shocked to see him not get burned with stuff.
But yeah, that's what it is, and it's kind of it's like just the way they treat nickel and safety. So like, that's the best way I can probably explain it. If the offense is heavy, they're going to slide Kanye out because he's just like a true nickel. He's covering your slot receiver. You're not going to have him cover even like a running back, I don't think.
Would you say that he's impressed maybe a little bit more? Like, I think when we got him from UCLA, I think there was a lot of just questions like, you know, he didn't play a ton at UCLA. And it seems like I'm hearing his name a lot more shine through. And I don't think it's just indicative of like, it's just a bad room and he's the best in the bad room. Like I think I've been hearing a lot of different things again, not with my own eyeballs, but hearing that he's really starting to show out a little bit more this off season.
When he's not, when his assignment is not number one, he's looked very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's not what his position is. Right. So.
Yeah. I mean, VB3 has just been, he's just had incredible camp.
Yeah. I mean, he's an incredible player. Hopefully we can get his first touchdown this year. Any other thoughts on the scrimmage, anything football related? Next week, I feel like we can just talk about cornerback, safeties, do our final position group, and then we do our prediction show next week. We don't have a guest, and then we're gonna rock.
DD was out there. I seen some DD look good. I just thought about that. You just brought up DBs, and that's a key for us too. Depth wise, like being able to make sure we got four really good guys on the outside. Yeah, I think DD looked good out there as well.
Yeah, getting him back healthy. He's another one too. That's kind of like just get him healthy to September 5th. I think, and I mean, this isn't new, nothing new I'm saying here. I think Ben Hanks is CB1.
Yeah.
And then it's Dijon or Cormani for the other spot. And then Flowers is 4. But like, I think all of those guys are going to play, like, because those 4, you've got to keep the cornerbacks healthy and fresh. And it drops off after that 4. And it not necessarily in talent, but in experience, it's like a drop off a cliff after those 4.
Yeah. It's unknowns, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then so after that would be Jordy Lowry, the transfer from East Carolina, CJ Bronow, the freshman, Onis Konenberry, from our Conan Banning, pardon me, from last year's recruiting class as well, who he didn't.
Bronow missed all of spring with that knee injury from high school. So like he's 13 practices in college.
Yeah. This is a scrap year, most likely.
Yeah. Gators right outside of the top 25 in the AP poll that was released on the 17th. Technically, if you look at it this way, 27th. They're also 27th in the coaches poll, 9 SEC teams ranked. The Gators will play 5 currently ranked SEC opponents going into next year. I encourage you guys, we're not going to talk about it much. I mean, you can if you guys have thoughts on it. But the guys at Florida Basketball Hour, we dropped that on your feeds yesterday. They did a review of the Denzel Aberdeen situation. He's been ruled ineligible along with a few others for 2026, 2027. That's certainly not anywhere close to being over, but there was a circuit court of appeals that granted the NCAA a stay. So right now, Denzel Aberdeen is not eligible for this upcoming year. But again, we will see ultimately how that all transfers out, or how that all plays out there. Just some housekeeping. Gators first game against FAU's at 7:45 on the SEC Network. And then September 12th will be against Campbell at 5:30 p.m. That will be on the SEC Network. And then the Auburn game is at 7 p.m. on the September 19th. So that's what we have there. You guys have any more thoughts, topics to go before we wrap up?
No. Great show, man. Great show.
Yeah, no, we appreciate Kevin Carter for joining the show. He's always a fantastic interview. And we'll definitely have him on for Game Day Eve. Potentially sponsored by a company that I could not be more
excited. I'll take yacht payments, man.
Yeah. Sure. We'll see.
He's putting up, man. Just holler at your boy.
I do want to give a final shout out to our friends over at Alumni Hall. Go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville right off of Archer Road, right there on the north side of the road, right after you get off of I-75. Largest selection of Florida Gators apparel in all of Gainesville. Go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville on Archer Road. Anything that you want. We're about 9, 10, 12. The one's Labor Day, the 7th of September. After September 7th, September 8th is the beginning of Christmas season for the next 3 months. So it'll be time, the holiday season. They'll sell all the trinkets, toys, collectibles, T-shirts, shorts, hats, golf apparel, golf supplies, whatever you might want. Alumni Hall and our sponsors will have you taken care of.
Question for you, Dan.
Yeah.
Earlier you say, you know, like sayings, I always try to get to the bottom of them. What's jump the shark? Is that like, where you get that from?
It is from chat. Help me out. W's in the chat if they help me out. It's from a TV show where there was an episode where like the show became, here, it describes a moment in creative work or TV where it begins a downward spiral of abuse. It happened in Happy Days. I guess there was
an
episode with Fonzie where he wears swim trunks while skiing and he jumps over a cage shark. And I think they said after that, jumping the shark meant like, all right, now it's just too absurd. So.
Gotcha.
There you are. Okay. So a little trivia for everybody. I kind of knew what it was, but kind of didn't. So it's good reminder there. So we appreciate Greg Brunt. He had a podcast interview. Go watch that. It talks a lot about his business and everything that he's built. We appreciate Greg's support for as long as this show has been around, and Corey and his relationship go back probably a decade or more now. Go visit the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. Go visit Game Time Sidekicks and go visit Alumni Hall. game day eve will start the Friday before FAU. So not this Friday, but next Friday. So we look forward to having you guys twice a week.
Check out me and Ben's show, Fair Game, also every Wednesday around 6 p.m. And then Sunday during the season, we'll do the same energy Sunday, national style show, top 25 headline news, etc. Appreciate the love, man. Peace and blessings.
Awesome. We'll see you guys same corner, same time next week.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.